Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm Kyle Swiger, just barely in from a power interruption right here in the Philippines. Along with me, as always, the talented, the wonderful, the good-looking, Alex G. Fox.
Oh!
I knew all that calling was worth it.
Who's he going to pick?
Yeah, holding up. I'm very well, thanks. I don't even know if that was the question. But I'm a lot better than you, because you picked me.
See. Well, it's because we had a little back and forth on Twitter today about, sucking up to the host. And you won, Alex, so there you go.
And the fat, ugly bloke is...
Well, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thanks, mate. Ewan Rankin, professional photographer, Birmingham, reading literature.
Reading Scumbag literature? College. What are you reading?
No, I don't read. I'm a dyslexic. Christ, what do I read for?
Well, as you can kind of see, everybody, this is how this show is going to be. I'm literally just sweating my butt off right now because we've had no power for the last hour and a half.
So no air conditioning?
Just managed to turn on... Yeah, no air conditioning, no nothing. Oh, just been sitting at the dark. Had the iPhone, though.
It was Earth Hour all over again.
Sure was. Earth Hour and a half, actually.
Now, on a photo note, you got really upset at me last week. So I said, make sure you take a picture of Earth Hour. And you said, are you kidding me? And you took a blank screen, black picture. And your wife was very intelligent, and she took pictures of the security lights on the alarm. Very good. I was very impressed with that.
She'd been rubbing that in all week.
Yeah. Only darkness when you've got some light, mate.
Hey, there's a little bit of light in mine. I managed to try and get as near to the window as possible to capture the
blackness.
What was left of the moon.
The reflection of the flash.
I thought I captured it perfectly.
Oh, well.
You know. Okay. Shall we get on to a couple of stories while we still have some time for this week's episode?
Yeah, we're a little bit delayed. Let's.
All right. Well, let's do it. Let's see. This is actually the first time I'm looking over it anyways, but apparently 40 megapixels make up the world's largest interior shot. I seen this on the feeds this week. It is a beautiful picture.
Gigapixels.
Or gigapixels. Yeah, gigapixels, not megapixels. Gigapixels.
Mm.
See, even in the news, it's still all about the gigapixel. I wonder how big the sensor was for that.
Is it a multi-image, though?
Yeah, it was about 2,000 shots, I think.
Yeah, it's 2,947, so nearly 3,000 shots on it.
It's cheating.
40 billion pixels, and you can read the individual titles on the spines of the books.
It's that, I want to be able detail. To read what's in it. That's how good I want my shot to be. No, it's funny. I did something... I don't even know what day it is anymore after this morning. Wednesday. I did something Wednesday when I had a very large map to shoot and they wanted it reproduced life-size. So I did more or less the same thing. I took lots and lots and lots of shots. I kept my camera still. I kept the map flat and moved it underneath the tripod. Photoshop 5, the way it stitches things together now, it was always good, but now it is just mind-blowingly good. So don't be too impressed the fact that it's all stitched together, because these stitcher programs are brilliant. And I've just sent them a gigabyte size file of a map that you could probably print 10 times larger than the original, and it is pin sharp.
I've had those stitchers programs like on the iPhone and stuff. I mean, I know this is probably way beyond
I don't think this is still on the iPhone now.
Well, no. Of course not. But, I'm familiar with that. And you know what's amazing about it? That simple app, or the, even apps now that are in the App Store, they do really, really good stitching things. I've used them, and they're quite fun to play with.
Absolutely.
One little warning, not really a warning, it's a very technical point. I shot some maps that were in a folio book, and I couldn't get them flat because the books were sort of 1750s, and they don't like it when you bend them over your knee and break the spine. I do that, but if they're watching, I don't. But what I did, I shot one side up and then the other side up, that way I could get right into the fold and I joined them together. But when I originally did it, I had left Photoshop on auto, and what it did very, very cleverly, it noticed the join was at an angle. So when it put it back together, it put it back together in the form of a book which was half folded open, and it changed everything back into the perspective which I was trying to avoid. But you can, you'd say don't do it automatically and you tell it the way you want it to join it. But it just proves how utterly clever it is, because it noticed the angle that the bottom page was leading off at, and it fixed that other page to it, even though I shot it straight, and made it back to this exact angle that I tried to get away from. So it just shows you the power of these bits of software. They're just incredible. Billions of calculations, billions and billions.
Billions. Mm. Billions and billions. Have you done any stitching, Ewan? I mean, other
I've
than,
done
you know,
simple
on
stuff.
Your knee. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I the biggest thing that I do is I'll take a picture of like an installation at a place, and I'll have two or three images that I then have to stitch together. It's two or three images, though. You're not talking about, you know, 50 to 100 to 2,947 images or anything like that. And stuff that I do is very, very lateral as well. And lateral's far easier. If you're trying to stitch up and down from the horizontal, that's really tough. That's when you get, because you've got barreling in both directions then to overcome.
Do you think that this the photographer that took this, I won't say his name, do you think he's trying to compensate for something he's lacking?
I'd say Jeffrey Martin was not lacking anything, mate, because this is a fantastic image.
It's actually a good image as well.
It's brilliant.
I mean, irrelevant of the size.
It is.
And
you
look at the detail in that ceiling. You've probably got nearly 1,000 shots in that ceiling, and that thing it's the Sistine Chapel, effectively, you know, in terms of detail. So I think Jeffrey deserves all of the credit he can possibly manage, because I'd struggle.
You know what interests me, though? He's shot this thing in thousands of shots. He's then put it all together, but to print it, you're going to have to print it in sections and then join it all back together again.
Because there's nothing to... It's 23 metres long if you take...
Exactly. Can you imagine how much ink you'd need for your Epson printer for that one?
At 300 dpi resolution, it's a 23 metre long image.
I would love to see this done in a dark room.
You wouldn't get much of a picture if you shot it in a dark
room. Well, no, if you talk about... If they do long banners and stuff like that where they're sublimated or where they're actually are, you know, developed, that's not that hard, because they're on a roll, and the roll of paper goes down through a bath and then develops and rolls through and comes out the other end. It's actually fairly easy.
Mm. I'm glad you think so.
Just the machines that do it are really expensive, but it does work.
It's a beautiful shot. It really, really is.
Well done, Jeff.
Yes, well done, Jeff. And I'm sorry that I had a little poke at you. So, wrong choice of words. Let's move on now. One thing that really has caught my eye this week is the Olympus E3. You were putting it in the news stories, Ewan, just as about the same time I was. This looks to be a fantastic camera. Actually, over at Tech Radar, they've got a really, really good review over it. It's actually where we've seen it. Is the price point good on it, though? Let's start with you, Ewan.
Yeah, the E3, the E5. The E5 is $1,448, isn't it? The picture quality is extremely good. The only thing that I thought was, looking at the example photos, the ISO 100 image looks crap in comparison to the ISO 200 image. So I think there's something gone on there that's screwed it up. So I'm not going to pass anything on that, but the 200 looks great. And then when you go up through the rest of the changes, it's the pictures look really, really good. I think it looks to be a very good camera. In terms of the specifications, it's not bad at all. I think 1400's a little bit pricey for what it's delivering, though.
That's kind of what I thought too.
And it's working on a small sensor size, which again is never good. Size
now, what is the sensor size? 12 points. I'm trying to find it here.
Yeah, it's something like that. I can't find the statistic now. It's gone, but it's something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a 12 million. 12.3.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, 12.3.
But, you know, we'd said, you know, way back when I came to the network to do the photo, we talked about Olympus, and we talked about how it was such a big company that really needed to have some effort at getting back into the mainstream of photography. Yeah. And, you know, this isn't the best camera on the market, but it's by no means the worst camera on the market as well. So as a trying to get into DSLR range, I'm glad to see they're making an effort. You know, it's got to be, you know, small steps, and I think this is a good first one.
But is the price wrong? I mean, we were just talking about the price being $1,400. If they're trying to get into a more consumer-friendly market, and obviously Olympus can do this. I mean, they do make fairly good cameras. There are a few duds, shall we say, in the mix. But $1,400, I mean, wouldn't you for a few hundred dollars more, move up to a Canon or even a few hundred dollars less? We always talk about the Lumix on this show.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of trying to compete really with the Sony end of the market, and at the moment they've come in expensive. But, you know, it's one of those things. I think there's enough people out there of a certain age that would probably like the opportunity to buy an Olympus because it says Olympus. You know, they'd probably buy an Olympus over a Canon or a Nikon because of, you know, the history of buying Olympus cameras. So you might have people in their 50s that this is the first DSLR they've bought, and they would buy an Olympus over anyone else.
I think that's key point, though. That's the brand image element of it. It's not the spec of the camera that's doing that, which is sad.
And I'm astounded to hear that, because if you were to give me the same price point and you give me a Nikon or a Canon and you put it next to an Olympus, I would definitely go for the other two. I would probably actually go for the Nikon, just because I'm more familiar of the power of that name well over Olympus. I mean, I'm new to this, but it seems to me that those are the big brands. Olympus is not.
Yeah, but that's the point, because you're new to this. You know, if you were buying cameras in the 60s and 70s and early 80s, you would have been buying an Olympus. That's what you bought.
That was the Bailey influence.
Yeah, bought an Olympus trip, and that was it.
We've been saying for a long time, they need David Bailey. They need a daily David Bailey figure, and they haven't got one.
I don't know if there's any left. I'll take the job.
Yeah, because you are David Bailey. you do shag supermodels, but don't tell the wife.
Don't tell the supermodels.
Do they notice? The point here, I think, is if you've got $1,500 in your pocket, or £1,500, don't forget, there's a lot more out there to choose from that's at least as good, if not better. And in terms of serviceability, versatility, and the add-ons for it, you know, in terms of lenses that you can buy for Olympus, you've got a very limited range of lenses that you're going to purchase in comparison to a Canon. And you can go out there and get your get yourself a D60, or 60D rather, and have a lens with that as well, and still have change left over for a beer afterwards.
Oh wow, a beer!
I'm getting close to a beer already, mate.
Friday morning.
After this morning's twos and fros, I agree with you. I think the pricing's wrong.
This seems a bit high when I think I could get something for not much more, or even less, that does possibly a better job, or at least gives me the factor of ooh, I've got a Canon, or ooh, I've got a Nikon. I mean, that's just how I see it. But this is like Alex pointed out. I'm new to this, or I pointed that out too, but he confirmed it.
I think when you make a new camera, I think this is a general point for anyone that's bringing out a new camera as a manufacturer, the hard part is that there's clearly R&D people who've gone and put a lot of love and nurture into this and believe that they're launching what they see as a quality product. And it's not like, you know, the Panasonic end and the Canon compact end of the market, there's almost like a camera coming out every 3 months to just keep the product line refreshing constantly so that they've always got something coming forwards. That's not been the case with Olympus, you know. So when they're pushing this out, there's clearly been a lot of thought gone into how they're going to manufacture this, what the spec is going to be, and how they're going to pump it out. But maybe there's been a kind of a disconnect between the component parts that they want to buy and then the end price that it's going to hit, and where the marketing people see it and where the R&D people saw it. You know, R&D people might have been going for the prosumer range at $1,000, but actually when they've done the work, the marketing people have then said, well, it's a bit expensive on parts, we're not making as much money, we're going to pitch it at a higher element of the market because our, you know, our focus groups tell us that we can make real inroads here. And then when they pump it out, a lot of the people, you know, I'll look at it and go, well, I'm sorry, but I'm stuck with Canon. Alex is going to go, oh, well, I'm sorry, but I'm stuck with Nikon. So they've eliminated the pro end straight away. The prosumer element, they're sitting there wanting, well, you know, I want half a dozen lenses to go out and shoot various things as a hobby. And I think, you know, the lens thing is not the end of the world. They haven't got 20 grand's worth of lenses. They've got a couple of grand's worth of lenses. They could make the jump, but then they're sitting there going, well, it's tried and trusted. I know where I am. I know what I'm getting. And it's a real hard job for Olympus to break back into the market because so many people have moved away.
How's your take on that, Alex? Just to sum us up.
Yeah, I think Ewan is right in a lot of respects. I still hold on to the fact that, you know, there's a lot of cameras that I don't own, which I would like to own. And, you know, they're names like Mamiya and places like that, that unless you're a professional, you're not going to ever heard of them. You know, some of those cameras knock Nikon and Canon into a cocked hat. Mm. But, you know, so there, I think there is a space. I think there's a space if someone, I mean, with obscene amounts of money, want to get behind Olympus. There's only two players in that Canon Nikon market at the moment. Sony are biting at the heels, but, you know, they're not really as interested as they are in building PS3s and things. Olympus is a camera company, and I think if someone puts some real money behind it and some real effort behind it, I think there's a place in the market for a third player.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, but I don't think it'll happen.
Probably not, okay. But I like the idea.
Okay.
Well, at least you guys both agreed on something there. Let's move on to one of our last stories now, and we're talking about cameras. Now, how about the guys that make the best-looking Lego cameras ever? We're talking about Pentax. And we're talking about a big rumor, which is the mirrorless camera system. This is some images that have actually leaked just actually before we started doing the show for this week. Mirrorless, this is actually comes from mirrorlessrumors.com, a Pentax NC1 mirrorless camera system. Possibly in time for summertime.
Yeah, May, June.
I took the trouble because, you know, I don't really comment on mirrorless cameras because, you know, other than the fact that they save a little bit of space in the actual body of the camera, I couldn't really see what the point was other than the fact that it's one less moving part, so that's one less thing to go wrong, which, you know, is never a bad thing. And so I just thought, you know what, I'm going to really try and find out what the point of mirrorless cameras are. And what it basically comes down to is it takes up less room in the camera. But there are downsides to it, which people don't mention, that the autofocusing is far, far, far slower than it is on a mirrored camera on a DSLR. You know, you couldn't use a mirrorless camera for sports photography, for instance, because it just won't focus quick enough. All I've noticed is there's a lot of downsides other than the fact that it's a smaller piece of kit. And so it's the Emperor's New Clothes again, I think. I really do believe there's issues with the cutting away having viewfinders because there's no mirror to get a direct viewfinder from. So there's no actual optical link between the lens and your eye anymore. It's all going through some processor. I think it's just because it's new, people are going for it. And it's a step between maybe compact and bridge camera. And it's just another niche market in the middle. I really don't see too much of the point, but that's probably not what I was meant to say.
You say it's new, so therefore it's newer technology. Is this something that we look to improve upon? Is this the next phase for the camera world, or is this simply just something to, you know, for the sauce at the moment? You know, something that tastes good right now, but you don't really see anything coming of it. How about you, Ewan? What do you think?
I agree with Alex. I think that what you've got here is R&D that's trying to sell to the consumer to make more money to do more R&D. I don't think you actually get a great deal from having this type of system in terms of ISO range and improving the ISO range and capture quality of the sensors. That's a sensor-based issue. Mirrors makes no odds whatsoever. In terms of focus time, as Alex says, they're of no value whatsoever. You get a smaller camera. Well, cameras are smaller already anyway. So, you know, I looked at my mother-in-law's Nikon that she brought up the last time she was up here. That's a real small camera. It fits in the palm of my hand. It shoots 12 megapixels and the images are pretty good. And it's not exactly heavy. It's no worse than a reasonably large smartphone. So, and then you go to the smartphone market. You know, the smartphone market's taking really good pictures at the moment. If they can sort out the small sensor size with the image capture quality up to 12 megapixels, this end of the market is lost anyway. So what's the point?
Yeah,
that's a good point. Even though this thing does come with, I guess it's two sensors, one 8.5 millimeters and the other one is what, 5 through 15.
I think
that's how you say it.
What you're buying here is a proof of concept, and they're dressing up as a consumer product.
Yeah.
Because they're running out of money.
It's just trying to... It's a space between compact and bridge. It's a way of saying, okay, well, this is going to be a bit it's going to be better than a compact camera and as good as a bridge camera, but because we've taken the mirror out of it, you've got something little bit bigger than a compact, but with the lens size and lens quality possibly of a bridge. And so it, literally, it's just, I don't know, it's like you say, Lego. It's taking a bit of one camera, a bit of another, and managing to find a way of sticking them together with sellotape.
I think if you look at a lot of people as well, they don't want a larger, you know, a lighter, smaller camera. Last week, I committed the cardinal sin. Because I'd pulled my bloody camera out of my bag to show you that ring flash on the show, I forgot to take my camera with me to rugby. So I've got my spare camera, which is a 450D. It's okay. It's fine. I shoved my big sports lens on the end of that. There's no balance anymore. I was all over the place. It was like, you know, it's like saying someone's shaved off a moustache and their top lip started to curl up because of the lack of the weight. You know, I was all over the place with the damn thing. I couldn't use it. And I shot some pictures and just, you know, oh, that's it, I'm done. And after 40 minutes of shooting pictures, I was knackered from fighting with the lens because I'd got myself used to having my big, heavy camera. You know, my camera with the sports lens on it, it's a 6 kilo camera. And I'm used to throwing it around, and I've got the right stop points in my motor muscle memory and that kind of stuff. I don't want anything smaller. I want what I've got.
But at least you had it with you.
At least, I always carry a spare in case my other one craps out. So that was the beauty of having me second body in the bag.
Well, still had a spare. It was your iPhone.
Yeah, but I don't think that would have really quite worked. Even for the Tamworth Herald, mate.
Regardless of how much light you just had.
Apropos of the iPhone, a couple of weeks ago, Ewan said, I had to go and buy the Adobe Photoshop Express add-on pack for iPhone, which I subsequently did. And over the last couple of days, I took some test shots and I played around with it. And for £2.49 or whatever it was, it's very good value. The only thing I found is when you do a lot of noise reduction, don't over reduce it, because it being such a small screen, it tends to go very, very soft. So use the noise reduction up to a maximum of, say, 20%, then sharpen up to about 10%, and Bob's your uncle. It's a lovely bit of kit.
So we're all in agreement, just so we can clear this one out of the news stories for this week. Pantex, Lego and all smoke, no mirrors.
Oh! Moving on.
Fantastic.
Ah, yes. Shall we move on to your guys' cheap thingies for this week? We'll start with you, Alex.
Okay, my cheap thingies for this week. Okay, it's two thingies, but they're basically the same thing, but one's, comes with more bells and whistles. Lots of people these days want to sell things on eBay, various things, Amazon, wherever you want to sell them. One of the things that always disappoints me is you've got two loads of pictures on these. You've got the ones where someone's ripped off a pack shot off the internet, and it's so obviously not the item they're selling. It's just a picture of an item that vaguely looks like what they're selling, and that always makes me think, well, I don't know what quality you're actually selling me, because I can't see the actual item. And the other lot, when they stick it on a bed and they take a picture and you can see the dog's foot in the corner and all that sort of thing, and you think, well, that's no good for anybody. So there's a good space in the middle, and Maplin, which is just a British electronic superstory company, they don't make it, so you can get these things all over the place, but they're portable soft lighting studios, and basically they're just pop-up tents, for want of a better word. They're made of white translucent material on all sides. They come in carrying cases. The cheaper one, which is £15, you use your own lights, put it through the side, you're going to get very little shadow, but you're going to get a nicely exposed image. You'll be able to zoom in, and you'll just get a nice pack shot for very little money, and I'm pretty sure it's going to help you sell the items you're trying to get rid of on Amazon and eBay. Or they do a £40 version, but that comes with tabletop lights, it comes with backgrounds, it comes with a nice little stand with a head attached to it, so you can actually fix your camera, so you don't even need a tripod. The whole thing comes in a travel carrying bag, and that's £40. I think both of them are very, very good value if you're trying to sell stuff on eBay.
I like the £40.
Well, swap that blue chroma key that you've got there out for a piece of green or blue card, very light card, so that it bends easily around the infinity curve. You're going to have a fantastic little product studio tent there. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. No, I like the 40-pound one. I like when you get little things with it, you know. The more crap, the merrier.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ewan, what's your cheap thingy?
My cheap thingy is to think a bit more about what you've got in terms of bags and that kind of thing. You go and tend to buy, like, even the very smallest lower pro bags. You're starting at £80 for camera bags for actually stuff that's... Yeah, it's well-built. Yes, it's purpose-built for your lenses and your cameras. Yes, it's going to offer a lot of protection. But a lot of people think that you know, well, I wouldn't trust my camera to anything less than a professionally made bag. The links that I'm going to put in the show notes here take you to a collapsible trolley bag and also a Cabin Max backpack flight bag. Now, when I first started out in photography, I couldn't afford, really high quality camera bags. And I used to buy just cheap backpacks and then go and get to there's an upholsterer's up the street from where I live. And I used to go up there and say, have you got any foam, mate? And he used to give me offcuts of foam that he wasn't going to use. And I used to glue them together and then I'd take a razor blade to them and cut out the shape of my lenses, put a bit of hardboard or a piece of sheet plastic either end of it. And that would give me my stiff back, front and back. And, that was it, and I'd take it on planes, and my lenses were always really, really well looked after. The drawers where I keep all my stuff here, they're just standard drawers from IKEA, and all I've done is put upholstery foam in them again and just cut out the slots for my lenses and my camera and everything for when I put it in. You don't need to spend a lot on bags. Don't do it. And the other thing as well is that what you'll find is that you'll kind of hit a natural point with your bags where you'll buy a bag that'll fit every single lens you've got, spend £180 on it, and never use it. You know, you want to find the bag that works for you. And if you're spending £17 buying a bag and 70 pence a square foot for foam, then you can't go wrong, really, because if you don't like it, you just buy some more foam and chop it about again.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just to add to that, what I have been doing recently is I've got lots of camera bags, but if I've got to fly with my cameras, with all the new fangled rules about what you can do and what you can't do and all the rest of it, a couple of times at the airport they've sort of said, oh, you know, you can't put your computer in with that bag because that bag's this and that, and I give up. So what I did, and I've been keeping it ever since, is there was a post office in the which airport was it? Heathrow. There was a post office on Airside, and I just went and bought that. You know the packaging, all the packaging rubbish that you buy with the Jiffy bags? You know, little air-filled bags that are sort of sealed, and they had these silicon rubbery stuff. I just bought a load of that, and I just put it in a big, big Jiffy bag, one of my cameras, and I just put that inside my suitcase, inside my bag. That stuff cost me about £10 because I was stuck in the airport. But what I do, every time I buy something, it always comes massively overpackaged. Doesn't matter if you buy a book, it's completely overpackaged with some other rubbish and some other foam. So I've just got a box which is full of various packaging stuff that I got from nothing when I buy stuff. And next time I need to go away, I'm going to get a big envelope and just fill it with all the rubbish I've already got for nothing and stick my cameras in that. So we all get it and we all throw it away. So there you go. We can be eco-friendly and save a lot of money.
Be a green photographer, as they say.
That's only if you're on a boat, though.
Good picks, guys. Yeah, and another thing, actually, I would think, Ewan, I mean, by doing in that way, whatever new gear you're getting, whatever you don't have to worry about, you can actually custom fit to whatever new stuff you're getting.
Get yourself some more foam, chop about, fit your new item in.
Yeah, yeah. Really cool. Really, really cool. Shall we get into some questions, guys?
Definitely.
All right, let's do this. From Darren from London. Hey, guys, I've blown the dust off my camera now that it is spring, which it is there in London now, and you started shooting some blossoms, flowers, all these sort of things. Any tips from all of us on how to get great results this time of year?
Macro.
Yeah, macro lenses. If you got macro lens, definitely. Good one.
Yeah, this is what I always do this time of year. When things are just starting to come out of the ground and they're just starting to poke their noses through. I mean, it's a lovely time of year, and it's a lovely time of year to record it. Wide-angle shots of fields of daffodils are lovely, but a macro when it's just pointing out of the ground. And let the outside of the petals, let the outside of the flower go out of focus. Get the stamen in focus. Get the very center of, say, a daffodil is a lovely flower. Get that in focus and let the outside bleed out. You'll have a beautiful picture. You can print it up. Don't worry about background. Don't worry about anything because it is its own background and it's a lovely, lovely artistic shot. There's my answer.
macro. What about you, Ewan? Anything else or saying?
If you want an uncheap thingy, the best thing you can do is go and get yourself a prime lens at 40 to 50 millimetres, stuck at f1.4 to 1.8 to 2.0, and then you'll have no problems with depth of field. You can get as close as you like. You can stick macro tubes on it, which is a super cheap way of getting macro if you haven't got a macro lens. Mm-hmm. You buy those for tenner off eBay for 12, you know, or 13 tubes. They're superb. Carry around a large white envelope with you to use as a reflector, or a little tiny mini reflector. If you go and buy camera magazines, you'll find a cheap little tiny reflector that's sort of 10 inches across that pops open. It will be the free gift on the front of the camera and the magazine, and that's kind of exactly what's out this time of year anyway now. So lots and lots of light. Don't go out when it's peeing down.
Great advice. next question from Gary. Loving the show. Thanks. I've recently taken some pictures of me with my family at home and have one which I would love a nice canvas on the wall. Do Alex or Ewan have any providers for canvases that they would recommend? We'll start with you, Ewan. I know you being the fact that you do a lot of indoor photography.
Yeah, canvases. No, if I buy prints and I want really good quality ones, I go to Costco. More often than not, and Costco do a fantastic framing service, and they use real wood as well. They don't use MDF, which is nice, so it doesn't, when they stretch it, it doesn't spring the image or distort it, and over time it will stay up for longer as well. It won't shrink and cause distortion in the frame. A photo box as well, I've used them for canvases and they're really, really good. And one of the things that's nice as well is if you upload an image, very often you'll find that you want a custom frame size for it because you like the way it is, you like the aspect ratio of it, you don't want to go to the standard sizes that they offer. Then they're very, very good at talking to you about how you want white borders. And even though they're an internet firm, it's very easy to talk to a person and say, look, I know I've sent this through, I know it's not the right aspect, but I want to maintain a white border for you. And they'll do the manual edit for you and they won't charge you a penny for it.
Sweet. Alex?
Okay, yeah, I mean, I use canvases now and again, but you know, I hope none of my customers are listening because of a couple of days ago, I only just discovered that one of my processors charges me about £250 for a print on canvas. Because they use a very, very expensive, I think it's called Zigli, I can't remember what they call it, photo processing technique to put the photochemicals on this canvas and then they expose it and et cetera, et cetera. It's all very lovely and it looks really great, but for £250. And then I spoke to another processor just about nothing, and I noticed that their canvas price lists were, shall we say, somewhat cheaper. And I said, how do you manage to do it for this? And he said, well, you stick a bit of canvas through your Epson printer. I mean, obviously, it's not a home Epson printer, it's a big Epson printer. And I said, can I have a look at the output? And I had a look, and it was at least 95% as good as the thing I paid £250 for. And I asked him for a quote. He said, for that size, £30.
Jeez.
So I can tell you which one I'll be going to use the next few times that I get canvas print. So what I'm saying is look around. If you can find someone that will do it on an Epson print, you know, so it's you know, printed with a printer, it's not exactly as good, but, you know, it'll take a photographer to notice that it's any different. I mean, once you've framed it, you wouldn't know the difference. So, you know, I don't know what that is, 80% off. So, you know, look around. I don't know what that was, a 24 by 20, I think, and that was about £30 or something. So, yeah, I would look around, but make sure there is two different prices. There's two different methods. And however, have a look and ask for a sample of the actual canvas, because some of the canvases have got like a plastic coating, and I personally don't like the finish of it. So have a look for have a look at an example piece of canvas before you do it.
Have a look around, look at pricing, and make sure the canvas is up to your standards, really.
Yeah.
Whatever's in your budget there, Gary. Last question, guys, comes from Gavin from Kansas City. Good luck there with you, Gavin. You guys get Google Internet pretty soon. Listening and watching the last couple of weeks to Ewan and Alex discussing the Fujifilm X100. He was intrigued, actually, that I didn't seem to ask the obvious question, and he's absolutely correct. When Ewan and Alex were arguing over the price, If I gave you money, if I gave you the money needed, would you go out and buy this camera, or is there something else you would buy instead? It's a great question. Thank you, Gavin. And yes, I should have asked that. I'll ask. I'll start with you, Ewan.
No.
Okay. Simple. Sweet. Short.
I'd spend 250 quid on something that was decent enough, that was small and I could carry around, and I'd drink the rest.
Ah, yes, a little recreation afterwards. Take some photos, drink some beer.
There you go.
All right, Alex?
Okay. I would spend the money on that, but if I had the option to not spend the money on that, a few months ago I was raving about, I think it was an Olympus camera, and I think it was the XZ1, please don't quote me on it, and I remember it was about £600, but it was the one where I was saying that at last somebody's brought out a compact camera suitable for the professional.
That's right.
Hasn't got the gimmicks, it hasn't got all the flashes, everything else. It's got a really, really large sensor and a really, really good lens. And the Fuji is the equivalent of the Olympus, but the Olympus is two-thirds of the price. So I'd have a look for the Olympus.
But what's the model on that again,
Alex? Because I think Olympus a lot of what? People are going to bring out these professional compacts.
But do bear in mind that Alex has got the attention span of a seven-year-old when it comes to cameras. oh, a new one. Oh,
oh.
Yeah, exactly.
It's camera porn every day.
Yeah.
What's the model on that again, Alex? The Olympus?
I think it was an XZ1 or an XZ1, as our American and sometimes Filipino friends say.
Ah, yes. Yeah, I think it is. The Olympus XZ1. Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Is XZ
nice
length.
Camera?
Very good.
Yeah, nice little camera there. It's been an Olympus loving show. How about some sponsorship, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of sponsorship, we could not do this show without UK2.net. They literally keep the entire network alive. Every show that's on the network, all our bandwidth, all of our hosting provided by UK2.net. Please go to BagelTechNews.com right now and click the click-through over there. That way they know we are sending you their way. Have a look at their prices. They got VPN servers. They got domain names, web hosting. You might be surprised at their prices. Just use the click-through, though, please. That way it keeps us on the air and keeps letting us bring this to you and all of our shows on the Bagel Tech Network free each and every single week. Thank you so much, UK2.net. And what are we up to now? I guess it's April 1st now, so what did we do for the month of
We did 1.35 terabytes of audio data. Amazing. Only.
It's absolutely amazing. You must support UK, or at least show them that you're using our click through to keep us on the air. Because with that kind of data we're going through, we won't be on the air much longer if it's coming out of our pockets. Please, UK2.net. Thank you so much for your support of all the shows on the Bagel Tech Network. Guys, that was a fast-paced show. Really enjoyed it. And now we get to the time of where can we get a hold of you. We'll start with you, Ewan.
You can get me on Twitter at Ewan Rankin and on Twitter at Bagel News, Bagel Tech News as well. And you can write to us at BagelTechPhoto@gmail.com as well if you've got any questions. And we're happy to answer them, as you've heard.
There you go. And Alex, I already know, but go ahead and tell us.
Yeah, all right, then. You tell me. Where am I to get a hold of?
Everywhere in the photography world. Fujifilm.
Yep, so it's at Alex G. Fox and Twittery thing. Just to let you know, the Olympus XZ1 is anywhere between £275 and £400, so £300 seems to buy you a nice camera.
So there you go. Mm-hmm. I could buy that one and then still get drunk.
Quite often.
The camera to get drunk with. The Olympus XZ1. That's our pick of the week, guys. I think so. You can find me on Twitter if you're really, really bored at Kyle Swagger, Swagger with 1G, where I tweet a whole bunch of anything from everything, even April Fool's jokes today, in case you were really bothered at all.
Were they jokes? I thought they were real.
Oh, they were that good. Thank you. Thank you very much. Kissing up to the host. Yes, you get to start next week, Alex.
Yes.
Good for you. Speaking of next week, we will be back next week. Same time, same place, same photo news right here on Bagel Tech Photo. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
But I'll still be fat and ugly.